And we're here on another episode of the Joe and Doug Show. We're pumped that you're with us, and we're going to try and help you become the best version of yourself. We've been in a series of talks now these last couple weeks. We jumped on the topic of resonance, and then we got on the topic of, you know, what kind of people you should have in your life. And the last thing we did on Tuesday, we talked about reality versus mentality, and we stuck on the illustration of the mentality of a wealthy person, but the reality of maybe not having the money that you want. And then towards the end of that episode, you ran back to the room. You came back out here with your piece of paper. And we started talking a little bit about how we organize for the mentality change, how we position ourselves, whether on a vision board or whatever, for that. Because a lot of people, you know, you can either have a life by design or by default. And most people live by default.
Sure.
And you're saying it's better to live by design. And this is how I live by design. Now you tweak things. It's a little different. Maybe how you do your personal versus how you do your work. There's some different things on the board, but the board's the same nonetheless.
Principle is the same. Absolutely.
So how does Joe organize for a mentality shift? Maybe you can walk us through, hey, I had this mentality when I started, but I knew I needed to have this one. And this is what I did.
All right. So I'm a really stupid person if I'm left to that default setting. And it's almost like this. So
I think everyone is.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right. But do you find yourself like when you make a mistake, it's not the first time you've made that mistake before? No. Or like you lost your keys, but then you find it's the 5,000th time that you lost your keys.
Apple has made a thing so that you never have to lose your keys. You got one?
Yes.
My wife is like, we need these for everything. We need to put them in the kids' backpack.
Boom. Look at that. It tells on me. It tells everybody where my keys are.
29 or 39 bucks, something like that?
Like 50 bucks.
50 bucks?
Yeah.
That's worth it.
For sure.
Yeah, and you can like ping it and beep it and stuff. That's cool. Yes. If you don't know what we're talking about, Apple has these little like keychain, key ring deals that are awesome for when you lose keys. And when you repeat those bad behaviors, we had a pastor before, Pastor Mike, Pastor Christian, he would lose his keys like 5 times a day. And then it became a game because if I found the keys, I would rehide them, but I make it more difficult for him to find, and we'd have some fun with that. Sometimes not so much fun when I forgot where I put them. But you have those repeated behaviors and you get frustrated because you keep making the same mistake over and over.
Well, here's the reason that and the theme that I noticed about myself is that when I ran across something that was a law, right? Mm-hmm. A rule. Like I found something that's a natural law. And once I acknowledge that it's something that I want to do, I have to put it somewhere to remind myself that that's something that I want to do. Mm-hmm. And so that's where these kind of lists came through. Like once I say, okay, all right, speeding, I get tickets and it costs money. If I speed, when I'm speeding, even if I don't get caught, I'm willingly okay with it costing me money. Yeah. So if I want to create a rule that says I'm not going to speed, then I insulate myself from paying the money. And if I like that, I keep doing it. If I don't like that, then I basically have to phrase it where I'm stupid if I speed, right? Because I sound kind of silly, like, what do I want to do today? Speeding, is it worth it? Do I want to spend $300 to go this fast? No. And then I'm able to correct myself.
Okay. Yeah. Well, and I think that's an easy illustration because the cost benefit is like immediate.
Yes.
You get caught speeding, you're paying the ticket, right? But certain other things that we do in our life, the cost benefit takes years to produce. And so it's very difficult for people to go, you know what? I'm going to put this work in, but I'm not going to see the results for 5 years.
Yes.
I'm going to till that field, but I don't get to eat any fruit from it for 5 years.
Yeah.
There are people that are just like, it's not worth it. You know, I'd rather spend the extra $10 at the supermarket than grow my own fruit. And I get where there can be trade-off there, but some things are not, you don't receive any other way than putting in the time and work. And you and I've said that on the show repeatedly. You know, we often see people that everyone's like, oh man, they're an overnight success, you know, and we joke and laugh like, yeah, those 25-year overnight successes, nobody saw them when they were in a garage making nothing. And now they've worked and worked and worked. And now that everybody knows about them, they're an overnight success. But in actuality, they've been working and experimenting all along.
Yeah. And so like through this series of planting those seeds, so instant gratification, people are going to really be hard on this deal. But if you ask me to count all the seeds that I have planted, they're in the thousands.
Yeah.
And some of them have never popped out of the ground and some of them have popped out of the ground. but I keep planting because I know like today is 3 years from now. So I keep planting, know that someday that it will be realized. Now you go to the early years when I planted and I was in that whole 5-year holding pattern. It was difficult. But the rehearsal that I had to do is I had to build a mental time machine, mm-hmm. and I had to travel to a future time,
yep.
where I'd be harvesting the seed that I planted. So when I planted it, I kind of pictured what that thing was going to become sometime in the distant future. But if I didn't go visit it in my mind and know what it was going to be, then I couldn't really get excited and I couldn't be patient with it.
Yeah. I think that, honestly, for a lot of people, that patience is a huge, that word patience. Most people are like, well, you know, if it doesn't happen today, you know, there's no sense to do it, or it doesn't happen in a month, right? I'm sure you've met people that switch jobs and they're like, oh, this is going to be so much better. And then they get 2 months into it and realize, well, actually, it's exactly like my last job. I have to actually work, you know, like, and the work might be different. The people right? might be different. The boss might be different, but you still got to work.
That's it.
What do you do for the person that's like, hey, I've planted lots of seeds, but I'm not eating any fruit? Did we get our button fixed?
We did. I think
we did. Okay.
I think
this reminds me of a scripture, Joe. We did get the button fixed.
So
Jesus tells this story called the parable of the sower. And he says, you know, a farmer came and he threw some seed, and some of the seed landed on some rocks and it sprung up really quick, but it died. Some of the seed landed amongst the weeds and it got choked out. It grew a little bit, but then it got choked out. Some of the seeds landed, got eaten by the birds and stolen away. And then some landed on good soil and produced good fruit. And it's not the purpose of the parable is not to say that 25% of your seeds lands on good soil, 25% on the rock. That's not the purpose of it. But as you scatter seed like that, as you put faith into the ground, there are times where you need to investigate the soil that you're planting in. Some people are, you know, if you're putting the wrong seeds in, that's first and foremost. But then you got to look at what are you planting it into? Some people are, you're not eating fruit because you're not putting it in the right soil. So you're out there scattering seed. Well, Joe and Doug said, you know, if I put some seed in the ground, I'm going to get to eat this fruit. Not if you throw it on pavement, like it's not coming up. So you have to investigate the soil and the atmosphere and the stuff that you're putting those seeds into so that you can have the fruit down the road in the delayed gratification.
And I'm going to challenge this, that, you know, most of you are probably planting defiant seeds, you know, because you don't believe something's going to happen. You find to be right that you planted them on the concrete and they didn't grow. So you could say, see, what you talk about isn't true.
Yeah. Or you throw them among, you know, amongst a bunch of weeds and they don't come up and you're like, wow, it didn't grow. Well, no kidding. You didn't do it the way.
But I do observe certain people that I do watch them try, and I do watch them like never, ever reap it. And I'm not close enough to him to say, okay, well, let's investigate, mm-hmm. you know, what you did and how you looked at it and how you're nurturing and whatever to ever know why their story seems so bleak. So maybe there are certain people that just don't believe in how this is going to such an extent that no matter what they do, it's not going to happen.
Well, and sometimes there's an outlier in the principles too. Sometimes the principles work 99.9% of the time and you hit that 0.1%. And I've seen that with, you know, reaping and sowing, and I've seen that with harvesting. Sometimes you plant your crop and, you know, a bug comes up and destroys the whole thing. You put it in the right soil. You did it in the right thing, but you couldn't plan for COVID. Like you did everything you could do and certain things come up. And so it causes you to have to recalibrate and figure out, all right, how am I going to do this the next time?
I pay attention to a lot of philosophy mm-hmm. groups, and because there's a lot of peppered in with all of the people who are just wanting to make you mad. There's some really intelligent people in this deal.
Yeah.
And most of them
got to sort through the trolls.
But the deal is that every once in a while, they'll go to a level of philosophy that makes me want to poke them in the eye. So what you just said is basically, okay, well, I'm being kept then from something happening. Right. So the philosophers, and I agree with them, but I want to poke them in the eye because they don't want to hear this in the moment.
Sure.
Is the, okay, what message is in being deprived of something when I made all the right reasons, right. All the right choices, and I made all the right moves, and I still wasn't able to get to it. When I watched Doug be dumb, I'm sorry, Doug, but be dumb, sure. And you got some kind of fruit. What about me?
Yeah. Well, it's the principle, you know, there's a proverb that says train up a child in the way they go. And when they're old, they won't depart from it. Now that proverb is true, like a lot of the time, but we all know that kid that was raised in a good house, the pastor's kid that goes off the rails and decides he lives a life totally contrary to his upbringing or her upbringing. And you can look at that and say, see, you know, the scripture is not true. Or a proverb is a general truth that applies most of the time. And so there are some of these principles and these laws that are built in that apply most of the time. You change some things about them, change some things about the atmosphere. I mean, even scientific laws don't apply all the time. Gravity works, but then you take away atmosphere and all of a sudden gravity is no longer an issue.
Or you take my speeding thing. There's some people exactly. that probably have not sped and still got a ticket.
Well, Pastor Mike has a philosophy on this.
Yes.
So when he gets pulled over, even if he wasn't doing something wrong, he feels like whatever the police officer gives him is okay, because there's been a whole bunch of times where he hasn't gotten caught and probably
deserved it.
That's perfect.
Yes.
And that's, he said that mentality to me a couple times, and I'm like, he's like, you know, so I try not to get upset. Like, there are times where I'm like, yeah, I should have gotten a ticket and I didn't. And then this time I'm going to get one. I really wasn't doing anything wrong.
Is that like the Hail Mary absolving of your sins?
I guess it allows you to feel a little bit better about yourself. But it keeps you from getting too worked up, if that makes sense. Because some people are like, oh, I can't believe, you know, they're always the victim in that case. And it's like, well, no, they're probably, you know, I could probably point out 15 times where you should have gotten pulled over and gotten a $300 ticket. And he's just giving you a seatbelt ticket. So,
yep.
Yeah. When you navigate your vision boards and you're putting seed in the ground, how do you evaluate the seeds you want to plant and the soil you're putting them into? Because both those components are huge. We can get onto the water and the sunlight sure. and stuff. But when we try and figure out what seed am I putting into the ground, we're trying to figure out, well, what fruit do I want to eat in a year or 5 years? And then the soil is, how big is this plant going to grow? How much fruit is it going to give me? Is it going to give me one apple, or is it going to give me hundreds? So how do you evaluate those things so you can determine then what you'll have?
So I have a magic number, and I'm going to stop using metaphors. I'm going to actually use some actual things so that you know what I'm talking about here. So I'm a spreadsheet guy and a counter and an inventory taker. I look at what possibilities I have, and I do risk analysis to find out which ones have the highest probability of me being able to turn it into something. Mm-hmm. So if I said I'm going to run for president right now, does not rank as high as Joe and Doug are going to go on the road and do public speaking, right? One is closer to what I believe I can actually do. So this is one that Doug and I talked about a year ago, that we are going to go on the road and we are going to do public speaking, right? And that is a seed.
Yep.
All right. So I'm nurturing it. I'm mm-hmm. pulling up all of our opportunities that are connected to it. Things pop into my life that I know have like the faintest hint that they could be connected to it. And I say yes, because it might be the one thing that unearths that one to get going. And so that is a real world, something that I want, something that I'm willing to wait for, something I'm ready to nurture.
After the show, I have to tell you about something attached to that.
Okay.
I'm not going to say it on air, but it's something cool that we can talk about. Because it is cool when you put a seed like that in the ground, though, then you come out and you got to water it and you got to check it and you got to, you know, put all the right nutrients in. And then one day you're going to go, boop, and it's going to pop up and you're going to, oh, there's a little green sprout.
That's it.
We've been waiting for this.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you don't want any too big gusts of wind. You don't want any animals coming nearby. Then you got to protect it. Then, you know, especially like your tomato plants, you put stuff around the bottoms to keep critters away from them and whatnot and keep them straight. And you got to put the things so they don't grow like off to the side. So there's a whole bunch of levels and phases to this, but we're really talking about the beginning phase. All right, we're putting this on the vision board. This is the seed I want to put in the ground. This is the nutrients. I know for me, I measure the seed usually by the outcome I want to receive. You talked about taking a time machine and going into the future. So like I want to look at, you know, whether it's, you know, somebody that I could see as a potential leader down the road at church, maybe even higher. All right, I'm making these investments now because in 5 years, well, I'm going to check back in. I even have notes on my phone. Check, there's some of our teenagers that are just awesome. And I'm like, check in, see what they're doing in 5 years, see what they're doing in 3 years. You know, maybe, just maybe their path's going to align. Let's sprinkle some stuff on here. Let's invite them into some spaces that maybe they wouldn't get invited to otherwise. And those sort of things sprinkle the soil with the right nutrients, the right miracle grow sometimes that you get down the road and you go, oh, wow, that really, you know, that came up nice. I, you know, I'm coming back over to check on this plant and wow, we got some fruit there. Well, maybe we need to navigate it. You know, I think for what people are thinking in terms of business, life, marriage, kids, it's all the long game. And so it's sprinkling day in and day out and day in and day out and knowing I'm not going to have this until I come over here. But the thing that sucks for some people is they put some crappy seeds in the ground and then they got to eat that fruit a few years later. And they're like, well, why does my life suck? And I'm like, well, remember those seeds you planted back there when you were super bitter and, you know, you hated this and the marriage fell apart and this happened. They've come home to roost. Like, that's the harvest.
That's yours.
That's yours. And so, you know, a lot of people are like, well, you know, especially, you know, in a spiritual sense, like, well, you know, I prayed and God forgave me, and God may have forgiven you. You may have forgiven you. The other people may have forgiven you, but there are still consequences attached to those decisions that sometimes you got to deal with down the road. You know, it's like the, you know, the inmate that, you know, is in jail for 10 years for something and they give their heart to the Lord. Well, God may have forgiven them for their sin and they may have forgiven themselves. And
they're not going to let them out.
Right. They're not going to let them walk out of the jail. They still have consequences to deal with. And I know that's an extreme example.
Yeah. Right.
But, you know, even, you know, I watch this with, you know, husbands and wives. They have a fight, a blow up over something, and they say some things that, you know, they probably shouldn't have in the heat of the moment in their anger. And then they got to eat those seeds because they turn into fruit, and they got to, you know, down the road. I don't know if your wife's this way. My wife is good about this, but I know she remembers things. And remember you said, and I'm like, that was like 3 years ago. But those sort of fruits come home to roost, you know, eventually the chickens come home to roost, so to speak. But, how do you navigate when you've put the wrong seed in the ground?
Oh, that's a good one, man. And it's, I'm not even going to say like the wrong seed, because one of the ones that crop up on me is that I was working on something and I planted a seed and I'm no longer there. And then, like, so on Saturdays, I write emails to everybody and say, I'm doing a show, blah, blah, blah. Right. And I send these emails and almost none of them ever turn into anything, but I do it anyway. I keep going through. So every once in a while, I'll plant a seed and then it visits me like 3 years later and I'm nowhere near that industry anymore, but it was what I was wishing for years ago. And so, like, I'm in a quandary, like, I can't say yes to this, and this sucks that I can't do anything with it, but it grew. It came up. So
that's wild.
That happens more often than the terrible seeds.
Yeah. Well, and I think about, you know, my dad always said growing up, like, you know, as best you can, don't burn bridges, because you never know when you're gonna have to go back across them, or, you know, and particularly in regards to relationships. And I've always tried to, like, go above and beyond, even, you know, people that decide to leave the church or whatever, like, I'm going to go the extra mile. I want them to feel loved for and cared for as best I can. They may not like me at the end of the day. They may not like the church. They may not like my wife. They may, whatever, but I'm going to go the extra mile, because at some point they may have to come back across that bridge to me, or at some point I might have to go across that bridge to them. And I can't tell you how many times I could have been like, well, forget you then. You know, like, I could have gone to that space and probably been justified in the moment to say, well, you know, you want to do that, that's fine, you can do that. And I've taken the extra meeting, or I've sat through, you know, the extra counseling session, even though I know like, this is about to crash into that wall, like, this is not going to go well, but I'm going to take this extra meeting, and it's going to cost me now, but I know that somewhere in the future here, I might have to walk across this bridge, and I want this relationship to be in a place where it's not weird, it's not awkward, and we can move forward. And the times where I haven't done that well, sometimes it costs me. Sometimes you run into that, you're like, ah.
What Deb accuses me, well, she points out an observation that I don't try to remember being mad at someone. And so a lot of times I forget, and I put myself in the same room with someone who's hurt me, and I literally cannot recall any kind of trauma in that deal. Like, we had a couple years ago, someone tried to do me lots of harm, and it stung at the moment. And then I noticed that I was sitting in the same room with that same person, and I was like, should I be mad? Cause I don't really feel like it. I'm willing to go and do another business thing.
Yeah.
Right. And I don't even care. And I'm not bringing up the past, and I'm not living in that anymore. And in some moments I feel really stupid for doing that. And some moments I'm like, thank goodness I did that. I mean, think of all the mental overhead I shed when I don't have to remember who I'm supposed to be mad at.
Well, and that's the power of forgiveness. It's like the ultimate life hack. If you can figure out how to not just forgive a moment or an instance, but live in forgiveness, there's something that happens on the inside of you. There's something that's lighter about you. And so when you put those seeds in the ground, even if they're bitter seeds, or even if somebody else plants on your property, right? We've all had that person that showed up and is like, here's the seeds you need to plant, jerk face. And then they put stuff down and it mixes in with your crop. And you're like, what the heck? This is not what I wanted, but you put some seeds in here and I let them take root, and that root grows down, and you got to sometimes do some surgery. You got to pull some stuff out. but being able to forgive and to move on in relationships. And I love that. Not remember, you know, who am I supposed to be mad at again? I love that sort of mentality. It's a hack, because when you're mad at everybody and you got that unforgiveness always turns into bitterness. And I've heard preachers say that, you know, when you have that unforgiveness in your heart towards somebody, you know, you're angry at them for whatever reason. It's like drinking poison and waiting for them to die. Yep. It's just stupid. It doesn't amount to anything. And most of the time they've moved on and have forgotten why anybody should be mad at anything. Sure. And you're holding on to this moment. And so what? They put some seed in your crop and you had to do some weeding. It is what it is.
Right.
Move on.
Yeah, I don't know if this is a couple of years ago. It feels like an eternity ago. You brought me in to talk in front of a group. There was another pastor there, and we were talking about lifting your eyes up off the horizon. It's critical in this discussion, because you know we were talking into giving people the courage to be able to look over the horizon and see further on down the road. But in this discussion, like when you're looking further on down the road, you have two versions of you. One of them that can be in the moment, and one of them that can do longer term. Like you can look at Christmas 3 years ago, and you can look at where you're going grocery shopping, and both of those are in you, have that ability. There are rule sets governing the guy that doesn't want to get unhealthy, right? He has to do lots of things over a long period of time. Mm-hmm. And there's a guy who wants to serve some temptations and feel good in the moment too. And as long as those two people aren't in conflict, right, you can do both.
Yeah. No, that's the truth. And speaking of doing long things over or hard things over a long period of time, I went back to the gym, and every time I stand up today, I've been back, I don't know, four times now or something. And we did legs, and I must have done like 200, like between the leg press and the sitting squats and the free squats and the free weights. And my legs are on fire today. It was like an ibuprofen type day. I'm like, 36. I should not be taking ibuprofen after going to the gym, but man, I'm sore.
I'm going to one up with you on the broken bodies discussion. So I was moving some furniture this weekend. Ooh. And
what kind of furniture? Heavy furniture?
Yeah. Big dresser. And Deb and Ryan couldn't move. And I'm like, watch me. So I crouched down and like, I started pulling it towards me, and something in my chest went pop, like a rubber band. And I hit the floor.
Oh,
and
I saw that on Facebook.
Yeah. I was expecting pain and there was no pain, but I've never had something pop in my chest before. And I'm like, I broke something. I don't feel anything, but I should be in pain. Right. But you know, when I was younger, like you would not be able to move it, but your body never like separated. It never did that before. So,
yeah. Well, as you get older, this is what happens. But, and that's actually a great spinoff when you talk about planting seeds. You know, some people say, you know, you can spend the money now on buying a little bit more expensive, healthier food and going to the gym, or you can spend it later on medications and doctor's visits. And, you know, because people are always like, well, you know, it's so expensive to eat healthy. I've been guilty of saying that myself. And it's like, well, it's more expensive to buy a ton of medications, you know, in 20 years or 15 years.
Your preference, that's it.
Yeah. So it's the seed you want to plant. So what do I want to plant today? All right, you want to eat your harvest today, where you're going to run out and you're going to have to pay for stuff later.
Yeah, but in the moment, when you got the pizza there, you got the something that tastes good, who do you suspend? The guy that wants to give into the temptation or the guy that wants to live a healthy life and feel good? I mean, who wins?
I saw this meme today. It was on like Christian memes, and it was a two pizzas, and it had like two cheeseburgers, some French fries in the middle, and it was like, you know, dripping with cheese sauce or whatever. And it said, "Lord, please bless this food to our bodies." I was like, that's pretty good. That's a pretty good meme. And but it's true. I mean, you know, we talked finance on Tuesday, but you know, we could talk health. We could talk a number of different things. The seeds that you plant today, you eat tomorrow. So the more consistently I go to the gym, and the more consistently I drink water, and the more consistently I take the right supplements, and the more consistently I eat, you know, the right stuff, the more I get to eat, reap those benefits.
But what if you are planting both and it's sabotaging? Like if you did the cheeseburger seed and the exercise, there's going to be some disappointment down the road, because some of these ones, and you can substitute cheeseburgers for any other practice that you do in your life, because waking up early could be a seed that you're planting, and going to bed early can be all of those decisions, good versus bad.
Or I want to be wealthy, but then I'm going to go out and slam the credit card stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. It's all the same.
Self-sabotage.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's the last like 20 years of my life. Thank you for bringing it up. You know, when you talk about
is it scabby? Is it I rip it off?
Go ahead and just pull that knife out of my back. No, but it's true. We all have that area in our life where we sabotage ourselves, and it's like, oh man, I did it again. Like I knew I wanted to make this commitment. I knew I wanted to step into that. And then you get 3, 8, whatever, however many weeks, months into it. And then you're just like,
can I tell you something though? And I say that everybody does it, and I'm not clicheing it. Everybody does it in a different department. Mm-hmm. So the people that are like healthy financially, I'm looking around to see where their temptations are being drawn 100%. Into. I don't really get to see anybody. I mean, I think there's one guy, they wrote him in that black book that everybody likes to say. He was pretty perfect and he didn't give into those temptations, but he's like the only one.
Yeah. Everybody has something, an area where they have pitfalls and shortfalls, where they planted bad seeds and they continue to plant bad seeds. Like, oh, this time's going to be different. Instead of, you know, I didn't want to get tomatoes last time. This time I'm going to plant Roma tomatoes and it's going to be different. It's like, no, there's still tomatoes. Yep. And when you look at your life, you know, and I can count the number of diets I've done and the number of those sort of things. It's like, all right, I planted those seeds before. They didn't work. What didn't work about them? You know, why did I sabotage myself at this point? And I'm sure, you know, you have areas that you look at and go, if I would have planted these type of seeds, I would be here, and here. Maybe I'd be in this spot or whatever.
Well, I look at your gym regimen, and I am so proud of you for hitting this serpent on the head as often as you have. I mean, that so is tenacity, man. I mean, that because it's hard because you're beating yourself up over it. Like you're physically paining yourself on purpose, right? Yeah. And you probably get, you know, some people telling you things that aren't like go Doug kind of a thing, you know?
I don't keep those people around very often. No, but there's always, you know, always have a fun jab or two at me. But I try and poke fun at myself because it disarms the other person if they're actually going to do it. It's like, I'll use the self-deprecating humor. I'll unload the gun for you. Don't worry. And I'll point it at myself.
Right.
You know? So what do you find for Joe? If you look back, what were some vision things that you had that you tried to organize, some mentality shifts you tried to make, some of that stuff, and seed that you put into the ground that you thought would come up, and what you planted wasn't what came up, where you got almost like the bait and switch. You thought, you know what, I'm going to put in all this, you know, exercise, and then, you know what I got over here is I pulled a muscle, you know, like, you know, those sort of things where, I'm going to launch this enterprise and it's gonna do this, and then the next thing you know, you're three steps down and that is not what grew out of that, or a relationship or a financial investment or
well, one of the ones that, and it's silly and I hate to even mention these ones, but running a marathon. Mm-hmm. Mentioned it at least a billion times from everybody that I know, and when somebody questions me on it, I'm always on the same spot, right? It's my breathing. Like, I have to master my heart rate and my breathing. Right. So what am I working on right now? I'm perpetually working on my breathing and my heart rate. Mm. So if you ask me, hey, Joe, what are you doing to work on heart rate and breathing? I'm like, I didn't really do anything since the last time we talked. So guess what I'm going to be working. Yeah, right. Right. And I would get embarrassed about it when somebody questioned me earlier today. So like, hey, it's October. The Youngstown Marathon's coming up. You signed up for the half yet? And I'm like, oh, shit, you know? Yeah. And it was, I
know that feeling, just in a different department.
Yeah, so like exactly.
Saying that, like, I totally connect.
Yeah. Right. But now that someone mentions it, I'm like, yeah, I got to go back. And the seed that I need to plant is exactly what I needed to plant the last time around, that I have to not get distracted by running, not get distracted by the marathon, not get distracted by the embarrassment. I got to work on my freaking breathing. I know the answer. I could write it down, read it every morning and
totally
say, work on your breathing, dummy.
Yeah. So the beginning of the year, the seeds that I sprinkled in the ground and the really the sole big thing on my vision board was health stuff. And out of the gate, I lost like, I don't know, 25 pounds or whatever. And I had these ringlets. I still have them that, you know, I was cutting for every pound or whatever. And I cut through some and I was feeling pretty good and going to the gym. And then, you know, life comes up and you make whatever excuses you want. And, you know, I was doing pretty good. And then I ran into somebody who knew I was doing that, but I hadn't seen them in a while. And they asked how it was going. I was like, oh, I was like, crap.
That's it.
It's that exact same feeling. And I had it literally 2 days ago. I'm down like 16 pounds from the beginning of the year, which is awesome and good. Great. I'll take it. You know, I wanted to be further along. My daughter comes into the room and she goes, I was fixing something on the board. And she goes, oh, you know, the board. She's like, when are you going to cut more rings off that thing? And I was like, you shut your mouth. You know,
like, well, and that's what I was going to say. Like, I want to do a marathon and I felt good that I want to do a marathon. When people mention that I haven't gone there, it feels like shit. It's almost like I don't want to do it anymore.
Yes, I totally. I'm like, all right, well, you know, you're going to bring it up. I'm going downstairs to eat some ice cream. How about that? You want to talk about my dead dog from childhood too? You know, like, yeah.
But it's up to me then to convert it into feeling good about it and using as a motivating factor.
Yeah.
And I know that I can't be good at everything. I don't have to be, but this is one of those things that it's so meaningful to me and I am so serious about it. But if you looked at me by the evidence of me being serious, I'd be such a person who doesn't take me seriously.
No, I totally connect with that on this base level of who I am. I totally get that. Mine is on that diet front. And when you succeed at it, it feels great. And then everybody's like, oh, you know, you did really great for 6 months. And I'm like, yeah, I did. And like, what happened? I'm like, you know, and you go right back into that cycle. And so, it's an interesting thing with that sort of stuff.
But I'm kind of fortunate like you that I don't keep a bunch of people that will keep reminding me of my failures. But think about regular people that go to work and they'll dog on you and ball bust you just on purpose for whatever reason. And you might be able to laugh it off, but that shit gets to you.
Yeah.
And it's effective. Does. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's why who you keep around, like we talked about last show, is super important. So when you're organizing a mentality shift, I know you brought your vision board out and we talked a little about this last time, and I know you have, broader stuff at home for personal stuff because you have 7 categories that you kind of jump into and everything. When you're trying to make that mentality shift, what do you put on your vision board? How do you use things like affirmations? What are the seeds that you're putting on the vision board that you're going to see every day? They're going to make you shift your mentality.
Well, let me ask you the question. Like when you came up with the whole cutting the thing, what motivated you? Was it a positive influence or a negative influence?
We did it for a bunch of vacations and it was like a fun family thing. Okay. And we would have it around and we got one more day off, one more day off. We did it leading up to Christmas 1 year. So it was a fun thing. I thought, man, maybe I can get the kids involved. For me, social is my, on the DISC assessment. I don't know if you've ever seen the DISC assessment. I'm my eyes off the chart. And then my D is just above the line. S and C, don't ask me to do the details, but let me throw a party and do something significant while we're throwing the party and I'm in.
All right.
So for me, social currency is huge. So like having Johnny to go to the gym with, or being able to, you know, go walking with my wife or whatever, like I want to do it with somebody and we're going to go to the gym. I think in this next week, we're going to make that happen. I know that's high for me. And I thought by doing those, you know, I could bring the kids in and have them cut them and make it a social thing where like, oh, yay, daddy, you know, we'll cut them off. And, we did that for like 2 weeks and then it was like, well, how do I add rings back? You know, like, you know, you get in that spot and it's tough, but, so that was part of it. Then, on the board itself, I used a lot of affirmations. I used some scriptures. I used some stuff to, I have 27 things, that just are affirming to, you use the one, I love my body. And just some of those things to put me in the right headspace that even though I don't have the body I want when I look in the mirror, even though I don't feel the way I want to feel, I'm going to affirm that those things are coming to pass for myself. And honestly, affirmations are huge. You know, in church, we encourage people to take sometimes scriptures and my wife has about a dozen stickums with different scriptures on them next to the bed. And those are just, hey, I just want to see it every day. Some people put them on their mirror in the bathroom because, hey, I know I'm going to look at myself and there they are just reminding me that, you know, God loves me. I'm his child. I'm going to be okay. Those are huge for people. And especially when you sprinkle those, when you put that seed in the ground and then you sprinkle them with the Miracle Grow of affirmations like that, it just helps a ton. Do you use affirmations with your board and stuff or are they more?
Not really. What I noticed about myself is I'm very visual. So I lay out my environment so that they give me cues, but I'll take those things for granted and I'll stop noticing them because they stay the
same. Become white noise. Yeah.
Yeah. And so what I noticed about myself is I'll look at my vision board and I'll see the stuff that's on there. And I'll try to remember how long ago before I actually looked at it and emotion popped off of the page. Mm-hmm. And if it got a little bit too staticky or maybe not enough emotional, I'll need to jolt myself. And I have two choices. And the reason I asked you this question is because I'm better at jolting myself for a positive and affirmation, like something that I want to become.
Yeah.
But more successful, like to get me moving, is a negative. So if I can take a negative, something that I'm displeased with, like me just saying that, what do you think I'm going to be doing tomorrow? I'm going to be working on my breathing because...
You know they have apps that help with that? I don't know if you knew that.
I don't. No. Yeah,
there's definitely a breathing app. I know it may mess with your times you pick up your phone, but
I'm ready to move on from that one. I'm really good at that one now.
But yeah, there's some breathing apps. Some of them are free and then some you can pay for. And there's actual exercises you can do to control your breathing and stuff like that. I've seen them advertised for a couple different things. One's like stress and anxiety, and one's, I'm sure they have one for running, breathing and stuff like that to give you exercises you can do just for 10 minutes at your desk. Hit the thing and it, you know, breathe in, breathe out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I'll watch, like, maybe I would say my, it's probably every quarter that I have to bring my vision board and like push it into my face so I see those things again, because again, the white noise thing takes over. So I guess I get in my way more than anything else. So making those things relevant, just making them prominent isn't enough, because I'm going to make them not prominent if they stay there too long.
Totally agree with that. Totally makes sense. So, you know, you're going to have to re-up those things, and, you know, if they're not growing, uproot them and throw some more seeds. If they're taking off, figure out what was that and put more of that on the board. Now, you know, everybody can look at a vision board a little differently. You use the big sheet of paper. You can use poster board. You use all kinds of stuff. But the goal is to figure out how to tap into your psyche so that when you see it, you're motivated and you're reminded of the things you want to achieve. You use seven categories. Yes. What are the seven categories?
I only come with six.
Every time. I know.
All right. Financial.
Uh-huh.
Health.
Uh-huh.
Relational. Spiritual. Professional. Communication. And you got to be freaking kidding
family?
Me. Family? It's probably not family.
No?
Oh, my goodness. Maybe it really doesn't exist. Maybe seven is just a number I like.
Yeah, you don't want to do six because that just doesn't sound good. Seven is the
seven
number.
Seven is it. Seven, and one of them is a mystery.
Miscellaneous. It's called. I don't even know what to do with it. Just throw in that category.
So I pull up the wheel, and I look at him and say, how am I doing financially? How am I doing with relationships? How am I doing spirituality? How am I doing professionally? How am I doing communication?
Yep.
And I know which
what
one
plants are growing, what
I need to do. Yep. So I'm like, ooh, what can I pick off of here that I can throw on my vision board and make that the priority this month, this week, this day?
Yeah, that's so good. You know, I think one of the tweaks I'm going to make with mine is being so singularly focused is super interesting. Because I was like, all right, health, and that's all I was seeing in the morning. That's all I was doing. Throughout my day, that's what I was thinking about. So like if I got invited to a lunch, I'd be like, all right, what am I going to eat that? So it did work to some extent. I didn't always do the things I was supposed to do, but it was at the forefront of my mind. But what I found that was super interesting was there were other areas where I was not focused on advancing goals at all. And then all of a sudden I'd be like, oh yeah, yeah, we're going to do that. And that just took off. Do you find that to be the case sometimes where, you know, you're like, all right, I have to focus in. I got to do this thing and this thing. And you start focusing on that. But then number seven over here, the miscellaneous category takes off for you, or spirituality takes off. And you're like, well, I was focusing over here on my finances because, you know, we really got to make some big moves. And, you know, my emotional category or my, you know, whatever takes off, my professional category takes off. So do you find that to be the case?
And all the time, yeah. Because you don't, those connections, they feel like they're independent categories. There's just so much overlap in them.
Absolutely.
Some like hindrance in financial could have been keeping all three of these other categories from exploding. And you remove that one thing, like I don't look at my bills anymore. So what do I do? Like all these things, all the pressures that I was putting on myself are gone. So these take off.
Oh, that's good. So if somebody was starting out making a vision board today, they were like, all right, Joe and Doug, I want to put the right seeds in the ground. I want to put the right soil around it. What should they do? How should they start? Do you just get, you know, do you write 13 things down on a dartboard and you just take it out and go, all right, that's what I'm going to focus on. How does Joe know what seeds he's going to put in the ground? So we've got, you know, Jane Doe watching the show today. She wants to know, all right, I want to build a vision board. I want to be more intentional with my life. I'm tired of things being by default. So I'm going to make a vision board. What do they do?
All right. I'm going to give you some terrible advice. You ready? So the guys at the Palms basically taught me a new version of this. I've never gone through magazines and cut things out and make storylines based on what I saw.
Yeah.
I'm a visual person. That should have been a big occurrence that I could find those things that appealed
to
me. Now, today's culture is terrible. So the things you're going to find in magazines
are terrible.
Is terrible for you to put on a poster board. But if you can root through it and find some emotional connections with what you see, try to cut out like the physical representations of it and then connect with those things. So if you want a new house, cut out a new house, a new car, a new relationship, more money, like whatever that represents to you that you can make that emotional connection with.
So we're looking for emotional connections, not just making a list on a board. It's not just cutting out a picture and putting it on a board. There has to elicit some sort of emotion. So on my vision board, I put a picture of my kids and my wife. Because that for me, I want to be there when my, I want to walk my daughter down the aisle. I want to be there for my grandbabies. I want to. And so from an emotional standpoint, I connect with those two spots. I want to grow old with my wife. So those were important to put up there. The affirmations are not necessarily emotional unless I put emotion into them.
Right. There's a reason you came up with the affirmation.
Correct. So, you know, so you got to find the why. You got to find the thing that's going to drive you to get up in the morning and put that on the board front and center at some level, the driver for those things. And then that's going to be your fuel for all the other things.
And another thing we noticed with the Palms guys is the stuff that they put on the on the first round were very superficial things.
Yeah.
And to be expected that you're not going to have these big ideals when you do this the first time. You're going to have things that, like, you know, today's version of what emotion appeals to is going to be way different than when you do this a couple dozen times.
Yeah. Yeah. The further along I, and the more times I do it, I come to it. I used to write it out. I used to use a lot of words because I talk a lot. But the visual side is so much, I would write it and then I'd read it once or twice throughout the year, but then we get tucked in a drawer somewhere on a file this somewhere. And you know, oh yeah, I was, oh wow, I actually achieved that one and that one, but you know, it wasn't intentional, where putting a vision board up on the wall where you see it every day, is intentional to drive that home. So you got to find a good spot to put it. You got to put stuff that's going to elicit emotions. What else do people need to do?
Well, let me share some of the stuff that I put in there. Maybe some of that stuff will be revealed. So my vision board right now is a bunch of pictures. And this is the first time that I've actually put a depiction of money on there. Because as we talked in last show, I've not, don't really have a money consciousness.
Yeah.
But there's a reoccurring theme that $11.5 million is an opportunity that's represented in $11.5 million.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Don't know what the opportunity is. Yep. Don't know how it's going to translate, but I know it's there. So I want to be reminded that this thing keeps recurring. So I put it up there as a reminder that there's stuff that I don't understand. There's information that visits me that I don't quite understand. Yep. But if I dismiss it, then it won't visit me anymore. And I want to make sure that it's there. So that would be a connection with things that are outside of the realm of your vision, right? On a vision board. So that's kind of weird.
But those are the possibilities, those things that come in. You know, Sam and I have, you know, some financial goals and we're going, all right, well, how are we going to make an extra $30,000? Like, what does that look like without Sam getting a job? We want her to be at home. How do we do that? What does that look like? Does that mean we're going to write a book? Does that mean Joe and I are going to start speaking? Does that mean podcasts are going to start being monetized? Does that mean, I don't know.
Right.
But you position that in a way, you're going $11.5 million. And then the day it shows up, whether it's 2 years from now, 5 years from now, whatever, you've focused in on that. And then there it is. You know,
and that's a seed in itself. Yep. That is a seed, because I was open to the possibility that something that represents that 11.5 is going to visit me. I'm going to be totally open. I'll be able to identify it. I'll know where it came from and why it's there.
Exactly. So you put a picture of money. What else did you put pictures of?
Okay. So I'm building a building. So we bought a motorhome, and the motorhome said that I needed some storage. And I started looking around and knowing that we don't have as many storage facilities as we should. So I put this, I want a property, build a big pole building and do this storage thing and have an RV service center.
Nice. Okay.
That's on the deal.
Nice.
We went to Clearwater a couple months ago and we found a house that we're going to buy. Yeah. Down there,
pictures beautiful,
and we took that picture, slapped it right on that vision board. And so, like I said, this is when I look over the horizon, that it's a very active place. Like it gets put things on it and off of it pretty often.
Yeah, I love this. We got a couple comments. Yeah. Don Rittenhauer, who did the chef show, did the pilot episode. If you didn't get to see that, go back on Youngstown Studio and check it out. He commented and said, "Good stuff. I have $1 million check made out to me that I look at daily." Love that.
Yes.
That's really cool. You have to have those visuals, those markers. And it's not just stuff, but you have to have those tangibles that you're moving towards. You know, I think the first time we sat down and had lunch, you were asking me some of those goals. And I was like, you know, I never dreamed, you know, that I could make six figures in a year. And that's been one of those things that's been on my vision board. I don't know how all that's going to happen. It's, you know, it's not going to happen solely from a church salary. It's not why I got into church. If anything, I want to make money and not take anything from the church. You and I've talked about that.
Right.
That's really ultimately my goal, that the stuff I do for the church would be an act of service and I wouldn't receive a dime that way. And I'd be able, I just think it unlocks a whole bunch of stuff for people to pastor isn't even taking any money. Like, he's just showing up and serving because he cares.
I think that statement's getting in your way though. I know it is noble and I love it.
I know.
But you saying that, I think, you know, that's the one part you need to get over.
Yeah. Yeah. You're probably right. But, you know, having some of those things and then going, wow, you know, I'm closer to that than I was 2 years ago when I said it to you. And we've had opportunities come along and podcasts is developing. And I don't know where the click's going to come, but I know it's going to come. And I'm going to go, I'm going to call Joe and be like, guess what? I just had to file taxes for $100,000. I never thought that was possible.
Yeah.
You know, and that's part of getting, I've had this recurring dream over the last 6 months, of making $250,000, which when I see that in the dream, I'm like, out of here. But I've written it down and I'm warming my mind and heart up to potentiality for some of that stuff. Because honestly, going into the ministerial profession, you have that stigma around like, well, we don't do this for money and we don't do, and yes, that's true. But it almost becomes like it's a weight and it's a negative and it's stingy and you get positioned in this spot where if you talk about money or you think about making so much money, that's worldly. You shouldn't be worried about that. And you and I've had this conversation, nothing could be further from the truth. And I've had to overcome that hurdle of being comfortable.
And you have done the best at it that I've ever seen. Anybody that I've ever coached through this money part, watching you drop your stigma, because you do more of it than other people. Like the other people enforce it, but you have to believe it. You have to go along with it. And I watched you take years of belief in that and drop it almost overnight. And there's a little remnants of it every once in a while.
It pops up.
Oh, yeah.
Rears its head every once in a while.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. And it's been a chore. And it's been one of those things that even Sam and I, it's become something that we'll talk about, like, you know, even shifting our language, we've talked about it on here. Like I try not to say, oh, that's expensive, because, you know, what's expensive?
Yeah. An infinite amount of money that is floating everywhere. Like, how's that
like
expensive?
The same guy that gets up on the stage and says, God owns a cattle on 1,000 hills and can provide for you, then says, oh, well, $300 of whatever is expensive. Those are incompatible statements.
Yes.
If God has it all, then that $300 is not expensive. It just has to come into alignment.
Absolutely. I mean, this is like,
you're loving the show.
I love it because we have two separate ideals from two different shows and they are in complete parallel when you think about them and frame them this way.
No, absolutely. So last sort of thing here as we kind of wrap up, how do you, when you have a big faith thing, like $11.5 million, right? The average person that you tell that to, even when you said it here to me, the thing that floated through my head was like, wow, I'll never see $11.5 million. Like that sort of, and I'm sure that you've made other claims and stuff and you get the people that are just like, that's just Joe being Joe. How do you overcome and just keep grinding forward when you know that there are people around you hoping that you fail? Like, is that fuel for you? Does that, cause I'm such a social, like I'm driven by the social. Mm-hmm. And so I have to fight against that. Like, I love getting the pats on the back and the applause and that, like, that feels really good for me. I'm a words of affirmation person. And I have to fight against that because I die by criticism sometimes. And so I have to tether those two things and I got to put myself somewhere else. So how do you handle the critics when Joe says $11.5 million? I'm sure there's people listening to the show or watching and they're like, you know what I mean? They're kind of rolling their eyes.
Well,
and just...
you know how like I forget that I'm supposed to be mad.
Yeah.
That was the first practice to disconnect from those expectations. Mm. Right. And so like when I say $11.5 million, it does something different to me where I'm in wonderment, where I'm curious as to where it's going to come from. So my belief goes in a different direction. Does this involve anybody except for me and that piece of information? There's nobody else involved. So if you said, hey, there's no 11.5, I'm like, oh, you're not going to see it, but I am going to see it. I can pivot away from those things because they don't really enter in the formula. You're not going to help me with the 11.5. Maybe you will. I don't know. Maybe you're part of it. But I'm just curious.
And I'll gladly be a part of the show. Just throw that out there. you just holler when that day comes.
Yeah, right.
No, yeah. It's but it is interesting when you have big goals like that. I remember coming into Bridge of Hope early on. And, you know, my kids opened the nursery and toddler spaces back up. And, you know, my first service was about 80 people and, not all, but a good chunk of the congregation was old enough to like be my grandfather or my dad. You know, there weren't a lot of, young people, a handful. But the church was in a spot where it wasn't looking good. And I was coming out with vision stuff at 28, you know, taking my first church and be like, you know, one day we're going to be 400 people and we're not going to know what to do with the parking spaces. And I had people being like, well, can't we just grow to 100 first, buddy? Like, you know, like, And I get what they're saying,
right?
But I'm trying to cast big picture. And every time I'm walking into the worship center, I'm seeing it full. Every time I'm looking at the parking lot, I see the cars full,
right?
And people not. And I've been doing that since the day I walked on the property. I used to do these walks around the property. I would call them prayer walks, and they were prayer walks, but they were also vision walks. Like, as I'm walking, I'm looking, and I'm looking with imagination and what could be and the possibilities and, you know, each room. And then it turned into, you know, I take out my phone and be like, man, this pisses me off. We need to fix that. And that's got to happen this week. And I would start making this list. And then the list would get smaller and smaller and smaller. And then the goals, all of a sudden, you know, the 5-year strategy that I had was done in 18 months. And I was like, well, that was quick. I got to come up with bigger and better goals.
Right.
And, but as you start to get into some of that stuff, you're always going to have, and I had a handful of them, you know, oh, pastor, I got boots older than you, you know, you sure you're going to, and I get sometimes people are doing that, but sometimes they're really trying to lower you to their level because they can't believe.
Let me kind of like reframe this, because there's more understanding in this than you realize. So the first parallel that I thought were like, okay, people are different spots. Like my finances might not be at the same spot that your finances.
Yeah, sure.
So when I'm like, hey, I'm, you know, not even paying attention to what's coming in through the account, I'm just paying them. What are you saying with what's coming in your account? You're not saying that same thing. So you're going
to
give.
I'm thinking, how do I get to that spot where I don't have to worry about?
Well, you are, but let's pick someone who's not you. They're saying, well, you can never, that doesn't even exist, right? Even though it exists, I'm telling you.
2 years ago, I would have been that way.
Okay.
Yeah.
So so not every meaning in a moment can translate to another person who has a perception that means that can't even exist. Must be only for rich people or somebody else.
Exactly.
And it's dismissed because it's separated from what they would be willing to believe. So every time you're like, hey, I can see 400 people there, that person, that message isn't for them. It's that they're not lined up where they have an understanding where that's even a possibility in their realm.
You know, when I was, I had a mentor early on when I was in Bible school, and they talked about casting vision, and they said, you know, sometimes the shepherds get too far out in front of the sheep, and the sheep can't follow a shepherd they can't see. And so sometimes you get so far down the vision tunnel that you turn around, and you're like, oh, I don't have any sheep with me. And they talked about in that, like, yeah, you should have a 10-year vision. You should be able to see down the road, but you need to come back and articulate, all right, what's step one? Because all the sheep are just looking for step one. Most of the sheep can't come to step 3, 5, and 10. They're not ready to be in that spot. They think you're crazy, but if you can earn trust with step one and then step two and keep your eye on down the road. And I learned that early on. I cast really big, but I was probably on step, you know, 27, and everybody's like, all right, well, you know, how are we going to fix this? You know, like real practical stuff. And we did the practical stuff, but I always kept the vision bigger you know, kind of where we were at.
I'm going to say the opposite of you. This is a saying that's on the opposite.
Now,
I'm not calling you an idiot. I swear to you.
Do it. You're good.
I
trust you.
Okay. Yeah. So the opposite of you is if you can't spot the sucker, you are the sucker.
Oh, yeah.
The opposite of that is you're looking around for the leader. Hmm. You are the leader.
Yeah. No, it's true. Well, we're.
That was a long one. Heck yeah.
We're at 54 after, and we appreciate you guys joining the show. Plant those seeds, get a vision board, do some stuff today so that you can eat the fruit of it tomorrow, and we will see you back here.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would appreciate you sharing the videos and the word about us. Thank you.